Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Basketball Conference, the ACC Football Podcast. My name's Joey Weaver. He's Mike McDaniel. Mike, week 12 in the ACC. We have some definitive football games to preview. How are you doing? You ready to go?
Good. Yeah, I was looking at some of these lines, unfortunately.
That's not something I would recommend.
Yeah, that's all I want to say about that. I have some opinions about some of these, and I'm not sure I feel very good about some of the things I'm about to say on this podcast this evening. So,
yeah, we're not that big on this podcast historically on like naming these weekends, but if we just wanted to consider this something like, I don't know, Spooky Line Saturday, that feels warranted for what I'm seeing right now with a couple of these for this weekend. There is some stuff going on in Vegas that I don't fully understand, and I'm having to try to prepare to just steer right into it.
Well, if we're going to steer into them, then we're going to agree on several of these. So that'll be fun.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Before we get into these games, Mike, there is one piece of news that kind of shook the college football world a little bit on Sunday that I feel like we need to talk about because I do think it concerns the ACC at least slightly. It came out Sunday morning, just hours after we were done with our Week 11 recap show, that Texas A&M was going to be firing Jimbo Fisher, which was stunning to me based on, you know, the $75 million-ish buyout that they were committing to. I think that was officially announced either Sunday afternoon or even Monday morning by the school. But like that's what we're doing right now is Jimbo Fisher going to be out in Texas A&M. And Mike, as naturally we're going to do in college football after a coach is fired, is the first thing you start doing is questioning, well, who's going to be next? And the reason that I think it's important that we kind of bring this up on this show is that the first person that everybody seems to be pointing to here is Jimbo Fisher's former defensive coordinator at Texas A&M, current Duke head coach, Mike Elko. Mike, when you hear Mike Elko as a candidate for this job, does Mike Elko make sense for Texas A&M in your mind? Is that a real legitimate shot, you know, a chance that he is going to leave Duke and go take over head coaching for the Aggies?
Yes. Yes, does. He is a guy who is familiar with the school. Mm-hmm. He knows how to recruit the area. He knows how to get the most out of the talent that he has at like at Duke, for example. He is a culture guy. His players, at least at Duke, from what we can tell, love playing for him. No reason to think otherwise in terms of how he's been as a defensive coordinator. It seems like guys love playing for him. He would make a lot of sense. Is he splashy enough for Texas A&M? That is the question.
Mm-hmm.
I am not convinced that A&M is going to hire the right guy for the job, or if they're just going to go splashy name again because they have a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Because if you think back to, and I've seen this float around a lot, if you think back to 2 years ago, it was kind of the splashy hires that kind of ruled the day in terms of the openings. It was Lincoln Riley going from Oklahoma to USC, Brian Kelly from LSU to Notre Dame, or I'm sorry, other way around, Notre Dame to LSU. It was Mario Cristobal going from Oregon to Miami. It was the big names jumping ship and taking on a program in two separate cases where they really had no affiliation with, right? Lincoln Riley, no affiliation to USC. Mm-hmm. Brian Kelly going to LSU out of nowhere. Cristobal, of course, is a Miami alum. So that was a little bit different situation, but jumping from big job to big job. I don't know that A&M is going to come out here with all this money and go for this swing for the fences higher and have it be Mike Elko that they settle on. I think Mike Elko would be a great hire.
Mm-hmm.
I think he makes a lot of sense. I just laid out those reasons. I think Jeff Traylor at UTSA would be a great hire for all the reasons I mentioned about Elko. He's a culture guy. He knows Texas arguably better than any of the coaches in Texas. Like, mm-hmm. He would really recruit well there. He's never had a job where he's, you know, been able to recruit in the way he would be able to recruit at A&M and all the resources he has available to him. I think he would kill it there.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they're going to hire the right guy. I think they're going to hire a splashy name. Which brings me to our next point, Joey. You floated a splashy name to Scott and I over text message.
Yes, I did. And it does concern the ACC. Before I get to that, I will I will say I kind of agree with you, is that if I'm Mike Elko and Texas A&M approaches me and gives me a job offer, I think I'm interested. I mean, first of all, dollars and cents wise, I mean, Texas A&M is going to pay you about as well, if not better, than any other job in the country. Like, you will get rich off of that job. Mm-hmm. And if Texas A&M showed up at my doorstep today and said, hey, can you come coach the team? Of course I can. Like, you know, I will be generationally wealthy when I get fired from here in 3 years, you know, like whatever. Like, of course I would. But I do think that there is, from what we've heard about Mike Elko so far, I mean, the guy, he's a graduate from UPenn, Penn, Pennsylvania, whatever. Very, very good school.
Go Quakers.
Go Quakers.
Yeah, Penn Quakers.
That's right. That's right. From Penn. Very, very sharp guy. I get some of the things that we've heard from beat writers and such on Mike Elko. It sounds like there's a little bit of that Dave Clawson sense to him of he doesn't want to just coach anywhere. He wants to coach somewhere that he kind of identifies a little bit with some of the population of the school and some of the athletes that he'd be recruiting there. So I don't know that he would immediately just jump at the idea of going to A&M. Not to mention, having been there, he's probably seen that sausage factory from the inside a little bit. And there's something to be said that A&M has all the resources and all the setup and everything you could ever want to be successful there, and hasn't won a national title since World War II. Is that right? Like, you know, has really struggled to even make it to the top, much less, you know, get over and fully win something there. So it seems like something's there that makes that not the most ideal job. There's something that's missing there. And so all I'm saying is basically, I do think there's a chance that Mike Elko leaves Duke sooner than later, but I suspect he's going to be very picky about where he goes. And if so, he might leave some money on the table to go somewhere other than Texas A&M, is basically what I'm thinking. Is that reasonable?
Yeah, I mean, that's reasonable to me. I think that the other point of if they're able to land an elite coach, which we don't know that Mike Elko is an elite coach, it's too early to tell. He's in his second year as a head coach. If an elite coach were to ever find its way to College Station, maybe we're having a different conversation about this program in 5 years. Georgia couldn't win anything before Kirby Smart got there. They couldn't win anything. They hadn't won in a very long time. Kirby gets there and now it's a machine, and it will be until he retires or goes somewhere else.
Which I would love if that was, you know, tomorrow or the next day or
very soon,
soon as possible. I hope the NFL comes calling for Kirby. Anything at all.
Point being, like, an elite coach is going to be an elite coach anywhere where there's resources. Like, I think that's a statement that's been made. I think it's a very fair argument. We don't know if Elko's that because he hasn't had the opportunity to be in an elite program yet. No offense to Duke, right? But he's been very good. He has been very good at Duke. So we'll see what that is, right? But I think everything you mentioned is very fair about the A&M job, because there has been something elusive about it in terms of coaches going there and not being able to win as big as the boosters would like.
Yep. And I mean, again, to your point, I have questions also about, like, would A&M pursue Mike Elko? Do I think they should? Maybe. Do I think they would? Different question.
I think he would be more of like a, it sounds ridiculous to say because of how good of a coach I think he is, but I do feel like he's like a fallback option.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like, okay, if we don't hit on these three gigantic names, let's see if Elko's interested.
Yeah.
Because that can be our, like, safety school, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, and I think back to when he was hired at Texas A&M, and the idea was they're going to make a splash hire.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a program that just spent probably collectively, you know, over $100 million that'll, you know, eventually it'll come to roost, but certainly over the next 2-3 years, that's a $50+ million move to get rid of a guy. Is it going to satisfy all the players at hand to go get a guy who's in his second year of head coaching?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You know, I feel like they're going to shoot for something higher than that. And again, with the money, you can get most anybody you want who is a sitting head coach anywhere.
Including.
Which brings me to my next point, Mike, that there's a name that I have seen floated once or twice, but I did not see it floated before I texted you.
I was going to say, you were the first one. You were the first one to say this, and I'm giving you credit if this happens. This is all credit goes to you.
Yeah, in our text with, you know, between you, Mike, and producer Scott and myself, I floated this name Monday morning. I felt like I had cracked the code. I think I was on the way back from daycare, and I could not text it to you guys fast enough that I had come up with this. But there is another name in the ACC that is a sitting head coach that I think there is a non-zero chance. I think it's not the craziest name that I have heard associated with this job, and I think there is a non-zero chance that they could go this route. Mike, would it really be so crazy, so unthinkable for Texas A&M to hire Dabo Swinney to be their next head coach?
Volusia's orange in like the comments.
Right on time. Right. I was mid-sentence as he sent that. Yeah. Would that be so crazy?
Call, but I'm always on time. Yes. It would be a little crazy. Now, I will say, this would be Jimbo. Would this be Jimbo part two?
I mean, maybe.
Dabo,
in a very different way, but yeah, probably.
Is Dabo on the backside of his career?
Age-wise, not really.
No, not age-wise. No. Not age-wise. Has he lost his fastball like Jimbo did?
I mean, I've asked questions for years of what was Dabo's fastball.
That's ridiculous. Yeah, see, I think that's absolutely ridiculous. But I just disagree with you on that. But what I will say is that I think that the Dabo and the Jimbo comparisons in terms of kind of what they were versus what they are when they're getting hired by A&M, I think those are fair questions, right? Clearly, Clemson is not the team that they were 3 or 4 years ago, right? Clearly, right. They're not. Mm-hmm. They're not a national championship caliber program right now. Clemson fans are going to disagree with me. They're going to say, we've always been a championship caliber program. We will as soon as we do XYZ. Sure, you will. A&M is, we can make that argument for A&M. Sure, they're a national championship program as soon as they do X, Y, and Z. Nobody is recruiting. Very few schools are recruiting better than Texas A&M right now, right? They have all the resources. Mm-hmm. They have all the fan support. What is missing? They're missing an elite head coach. Mm-hmm. I think that Dabo has done a little bit of self-sabotage where he won't get the best players he possibly can for reasons that reside around culture, which I think is very silly. I agree with the Volusia's orange comment. Clemson right now is in far, far better shape than FSU was than Jimbo left. That's a fair question. That's a fair statement. But then that brings me to my next question. Why isn't Dabo getting as much out of it, right? Like, why isn't he getting as much out of it as he used to? Mm-hmm. So I think the Dabo hire, it would be interesting because I think he would need, like, one of the qualifiers, I think, if I'm an A&M booster and you're taking all of my money, one of the qualifiers for me would be, are you going to use every tool at your disposal if you take this job? Are you going to use the transfer portal? Are you going to use this gigantic NIL operation we have?
Is Dabo going to use the transfer portal starting in 6 weeks at Clemson?
Fair question.
Is there any reason to think he wouldn't if he went to College Station?
If he doesn't like the roster at A&M, will he use the transfer portal right away to overhaul the roster? Now, there's a lot of talent on that A&M roster, but if he wants, you know, some players here and there, is he going to go in there and is he going to turn things over as quickly as A&M boosters would like? Mm-hmm. Those are all fair questions. Dabo was asked by Chapel Fowler, beat writer for Clemson. He was asked about the A&M job opening. I want to compare and contrast two quotes here, Joey, if you don't mind.
Are you going to Dan Lanning with the other one?
I absolutely am. Let's start with a Dabo Swinney quote. Dabo, are you interested in the Texas A&M job? I'm paraphrasing. I'm just focused on this job. Always have been. just trying to beat North Carolina. It must be November. That's all I can say. Joey. Not a no.
That's not a no.
Not a no. I'm not saying he's interested, but I'm also not saying it.
Which, side point, what's the point in telling the truth when you're asked that kind of question? Just say no and move on.
Just say no.
Yeah. Anyways.
Versus Dan Lanning, who just flat out says, I'm not going anywhere. There's zero chance that I'm going anywhere else. I have everything I need here at Oregon to succeed. And they basically, I'm paraphrasing again, but he says basically something along the lines of, if people are unable to see that this Oregon job is elite, then they don't understand what it's like to be here and be in the position I'm in. Lanning's not going anywhere. He's not going anywhere. And he says, I got all the money in the world. I don't need a contract extension. These coaches are concerned with stuff I'm not concerned with. I'm well taken care of at Oregon. Doesn't seem like a guy that's going to leave Oregon to me. So, I mean, again, all coaches.
What are the odds that Dan Lanning's answer is every bit as honest as Dabo's answer was? Like, they could just be two different versions of lying. They could be two different versions of telling the truth. I don't know. And I think so. Volusia's Orange, again, 0% chance this happens, says put down the hopium. And I want to make something very clear. I'm not hoping for anything. Like, there's no skin off my back if Dabo stays at Clemson for another 10 years, wins two more national titles. That's great. Good for the ACC, whatever. Like, I'm fine with that. I found myself there thinking of this from a college football just overall perspective and thinking 6 years ago, whatever it was, Texas A&M hired a guy who had a national title ring to come in, and they paid him just, you know, more money than was ever fathomable. And they turn around and then they fire him because he's just not going to get him over the top. And so the first place my mind goes is like, okay, you're going to fire him for who? Like, who replaces a guy that has a national title ring, who was the heir apparent to Bobby Bowden, who, you know, like, this, how do you trump hiring Jimbo Fisher with what he was in 2017? And that's one of the first places my mind goes, okay, who else has a national title ring or something significant? Oh, it's Dabo. Oh, who else has been, you know, kind of pissy with the fans and the media lately? Oh, it's Dabo. Who's got a preacher man vibe that would really play really, really well in College Station with the weird Aggie cult thing going on there? Oh, it's Dabo. Who's got enough money to beat out what Clemson's able to offer Dabo? Oh, it's Texas A&M. Like, I'm not hoping for anything. I am connecting dots prematurely. And in 2 months, when they hire Mike Elko or Dan Lanning or whoever the hell else, I don't care. But if they hire Dabo, I'm just saying, you heard it here first. That's all I'm saying. I called my shot here in mid-November, and that's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
I will say the funniest outcome is hiring Dabo.
That would be hilarious.
By far. Now, I've seen some other names floated, right? Like, I've seen Cliff Kings, because Pete Thamel is totally dishonest. He just talks to agents, and then the agents are like, make sure to get my client on your list so that I can get him a job somewhere. So he puts, like, Cliff Kingsbury on there. Like, A&M will be hiring.
Ask Urban what he wants to put out there. Like,
if I'm an A&M, nothing against Cliff Kingsbury, I'm sure he's a fine guy. If I'm an A&M booster, over my dead body, are you hiring Cliff Kingsbury to replace Jimbo Fisher? Fantastic. Yeah. You got a better offense. You got a way worse defense. Like, what are we doing here? Like, Cliff Kingsbury isn't out scheming anybody in the SEC. Like, what are we doing here? That would be very funny. The second funniest thing would be hiring Mike Norvell from Florida State, because of the whole Florida State thing. Hiring like another Florida State coach. Now, granted,
keep the conveyor belt running here. And
granted, it's just coincidence, because Norvell, I think, would be a good hire, because it's Norvell. I think he's good. I think he's a good, very good coach. And I think it's now proven he can win everywhere. You know,
make worse hires.
You can absolutely make worse hires. That would be very funny. But by far the funniest outcome is Dabo Swinney. Funniest outcome. Because, number one, I think it could work. Right? Like, I really think it could work, because I think he would kind of change a few things and he'd have the opportunity to do so. I think it could work. Number two, what the hell would Clemson do? What would they do?
I have no idea.
Dabo is Clemson. Mm-hmm. He is Clemson. He turned it into a national championship program. He's it. If he leaves, what do you got?
Yeah. I don't know. That's definitely a crazy thing to think about. I mean, he was the interim after they fired Tommy Bowden 15-ish years ago. I mean, when's the last time Clemson went to open market for a coaching search? Like, there's no precedent here. You have no idea. There's multiple ADs ago. You don't know what they're going to do. So it's, yeah, I don't know. But it would be hilarious. But I think we've probably banged this drum enough. It's just a fun thing to entertain.
It'll be very funny. But the other option is to talk about Florida State, North Alabama. So we decided to talk about this instead.
Yeah, we can get to that. Mike, we got 8 games. We got a preview for... Now that we're 20 minutes into this, we got 8 games. We got a preview for week 12.
Just saw the chat. Yeah. Just saw private chat.
There we go. We start on Thursday night. We have a one weeknight game and 7 on Saturday. So we'll start Thursday night, 7 o'clock on ESPN. The Boston College Eagles on the road in Pittsburgh taking on the Panthers at the big old ketchup bottle or insurance building or whatever it is these days. Mike, so Pittsburgh is 2-8.
Garbage.
And Boston College is 6-4. And Pittsburgh is a 3-point favorite here.
Mm-hmm.
So, once again, going back to Spooky Line Saturday, what the hell is a 2-8 team doing as a favorite over a bowl-eligible team this time of the year? Are we suggesting that... I'm just going to let you run with that. I'm not going to incite the Boston College fan base any further than we already have in the last few weeks.
I was going to say I had the pleasure of watching Boston College last weekend. Joey.
Bang, 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 you're dead.
That sound is going to get some run. That sounds really going to get some run.
It is.
There was no greater joy. There has been, well, I'm married and have a kid, so let me tread lightly here. But there's been no greater joy in my life than watching Boston College play football last Saturday against my Virginia Tech Hokies. God, they're awful. They're so bad. I mean, we talk about Pittsburgh being bad, and I had the pleasure of watching Pittsburgh earlier this year too suffer the same fate as Boston College did against my Hokies. They're terrible too, but man, Boston College, you go up to their place in Chestnut Hill, and you just beat the brakes off them. I mean, it was competitive for 6 minutes, and then they died a very quick death. This is a really bad football team. Now, I don't think that when I see Pittsburgh and I see our 2-8 record, you and I were texting about this earlier today. I think Pittsburgh is quit, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, mostly. And would that stun you if they had, especially with not only the way the season's gone, but also like some of the comments we've heard from Narduzzi, and just this is just not even close to what you would have expected as a Pittsburgh player this year, right? Like, this is a mess.
Oh, you mean like Narduzzi talking about how his roster's not any good? I mean, that would make me want to not play for him either.
Say, if I'm on said roster, that would be less than encouraging.
Yeah. Your starting quarterback was working out at tight end, and then when you were asked about it, you said, "I don't remember him running routes in practice."
Oh yeah,
okay, dude.
By the way, sure. The perfect irony was then last week being beaten by a quarterback turned tight end turned back to a quarterback running the ball and throwing.
Oh, you mean Dan Villari?
Dan Villari, former
Syracuse.
I want to say former Notre Dame quarterback turned tight end turned back into a quarterback for last week. Which we missed on somehow, but
don't press in. So my point is, like, I look at Boston College, I look at their 6-4 record, I look at Pitt at 2-8 and a team that looks like they've quit. And I don't really think there is as much separating these two teams as the records would indicate, which is why I do think Pittsburgh's a 3-point favorite here at home. I don't think that Boston College is far and away a better team here. I also don't think Pittsburgh is necessarily as bad as their record. Like, I think Pittsburgh could probably be like 4-6. They've lost a couple close ones. I don't know, man. Like, I the line makes me really want to pick Pittsburgh. Really want to pick Pittsburgh.
Just a full steer into it.
Pittsburgh's front seven hasn't been as intimidating as it's been in recent years, but it hasn't been outright terrible either. And this Boston College offensive line, like, by letter of the law, when you look at their stats, sure, they block okay and protect Castellanos okay, but they're really banged up in the running back room. They haven't been running the ball great. Can Pittsburgh contain Castellanos' legs in the rushing attack for four quarters? I think if they do, they have, you know, a really, really good shot here at winning this football game. Because Pitt's offense, like, they've scored here and there. Like, they haven't been spectacular. Do they have to be to win this game? I'm not sure they do. Low score, ugly it up. I'm going to just full-on steer into Pitt -3 here and take the Panthers to win this game. Low scoring. Total's 45.5, mm-hmm. which, to be honest with you, I'm surprised it's that high. So I'm just going to steer into it. I'm going to say Pitt -3. Going to take the under as well as a pick here. And we'll see what happens on Thursday night.
I think you're smart for
that.
Thank
you. I appreciate that.
Like, Vegas is telling us something with this number. And with the way that, again, you've got a 4-win difference through 10 games. And the team that has 4 fewer wins is favored. And that should tell us something. If I get it wrong, I'm fine with that. I'm going to take the points with Boston College. And the only reason is, like we're saying, kind of the quit factor with Pittsburgh and the idea that I cannot bring myself to lay points with Pittsburgh at this point in the season. With what we've seen, this team has struggled so much. Maybe they put it together. Maybe this is a win one for the Gipper, Super Bowl, like last chance to get a win this year kind of game for the Panthers. Would not shock me at all if they win this game. But and as much as Boston College seems beat up, especially at the offensive skill positions, how healthy is Thomas Castellanos? Not totally sure. Pat Garwo's done for the year. Kai Robichaud, is he back this week? We don't know. If he is, that feels like that might be a difference maker here. Is Kai Robichaud being back in the lineup? We don't know if he's going to be back. I'm just going to take Boston College and the points. I would not recommend betting this with a gun to your head or anything. And even like in my pick'em league, I'm going to avoid this game. I want no part of this. I don't know what's going to happen. The line spooks me in a big way. Honestly, if it was Boston College -3, I'd still probably be on the Eagles. I would feel better about that. But this line being what it is, like, I don't like it. So I'm going to avoid dealing with this if I have to. I do want to watch it. I'm curious to see what happens here. And I agree with you, Mike. 45.5 seems like a lot of points for the way that these two offenses, especially Pitts, has gone this year. So, yeah, give me the under 45.5. And this is as I've been doing this year, this is a candidate to lock up.
Thursday night.
The under? Well, yeah, I guess there's, yeah. Well,
we've been screwed. I'm just saying, you and I collectively, let's be smart about this. Make our picks wisely. We have been screwed on weeknight games this year.
That's true.
When you and I pick weeknight games, it does not turn out very well. Just let
it
you know.
It has not.
Okay?
It has not.
Just if you want to pick it, pick it. I'm just saying, we just got to be careful here. Pick our spots.
No, you're my Sherpa here, Mike, so I appreciate the self-control that you're helping me exert.
It's like
here.
You're,
so
it's
I
like
will
you're,
not lock.
It's like we're playing with Saudi Arabia's money here, all right? We don't want to we got to pick our spots. We got to make the right plays for very strategic reasons. Okay.
I was gonna say, where is he going with this?
I just act like you're playing with bad man's money.
Fair
that's
enough.
How we, okay. That's how we pick winners on this podcast.
That's true. Boston College and the points for me, which at +3, I guess just say outright, Boston College wins the game for me. Pitt -3 for Mike, and both of us have the under. We agree that it would be irresponsible to lock anything up here and should probably just avoid this game altogether from a pick standpoint, but curious to watch it and see what happens. So there's that.
As Scott pointed out, we were collectively 5-14 last week. So we were playing if we were playing with Saudi's money, we wouldn't be recording tonight. Let's put it that way.
We would be elsewhere.
We would, in a better place.
You know, the real strategy here, Mike, is that each of us picks the opposite side of each game, and then we're just 500 as a podcast. That would be fun,
but you and I agree on a lot of stuff, unfortunately.
On to Saturday at noon on the ABC, Mike. That is America's network, I think. whatever. The number 10 Louisville Cardinals on the road in South Beach or Miami Gardens or wherever that is.
Oh, God.
Taking on the Miami Hurricanes.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
What is this line?
Mike, once again, Louisville is ranked number 10 in the country. They are a top 10 team. They are 9-1. And they are taking on a Miami team that I believe is 6-4 and is 2-4 in their last six games. And Mike, Miami is favored in this game, somewhere between a half a point and a point at this point.
Sure.
Can someone, what is happening this week with these games?
It started at Louisville plus minus three.
It started
minus two.
Oh, two? They weren't even catching a field goal.
Information courtesy of ESPN Bet, now integrated into ESPN, where I get the lines from.
Okay, so we were talking about this before we went live, trying to like reason our way through how this makes sense. And by the way, SP Plus also has Louisville by like a shade, like it's Louisville by like a half a point basically. And that does include the home field advantage factor. It's in South Beach again. No, but we're trying to reason our way through this. And the best that I can come up with is that Miami looked like a buzzsaw team through their first four games. I mean, three blowout wins. They just cruised. Plus a two-score win where it probably wasn't even quite that close against Texas A&M. Like, Miami looked so good through that first 4 weeks of the season. And I think that's being weighted roughly equally to them now losing to Georgia Tech, losing to North Carolina, losing in the way that they have to Florida State, and not looking good in wins against Clemson and Virginia. Like, I think that's what it is that you're still getting kind of buoyed by some of those early season performances. We mentioned that Miami in SP Plus is still 26th, including the 42nd ranked offense. Mike, is this definitively like a top half offense in the country, much less like top quarter almost? I don't think so.
Well, no. I mean, Tyler Van Dyke is a turnover machine. No. When he's
Emery
not
Williams turning, is not playing here.
He's not playing. He broke, like, it looked like he broke every bone in his arm on that scramble play last week. He's
from the elbow
done.
Down to the fingertips, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not going to play anymore this year, I don't think. Miami here, like offensively, they were okay when Van Dyke wasn't turning the ball over. They were moving the ball. They have a really good offensive line. They run the ball well.
Mm-hmm.
Their passing game has been okay when Van Dyke doesn't turn the ball over. So if you had told me 6 or 7 weeks ago that Miami was the top 30 offense in the country, I could get behind it. If we're talking about now with what we know about Miami's issues taking care of the football, not so much, right? It's gotten them into a lot of trouble over the past month as the schedule's gotten a little bit tougher, playing better defenses, except for Carolina. I mean, they didn't really play a better defense there. They just got there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to do here, if I'm being quite honest, right? Like, I think number 10 Louisville is the better team. I also just watched Louisville get into a hell game with 2-win UVA last week.
Yep.
So is Louisville really the 10th best team in the country?
Not objectively, no.
Like, if we're being honest with ourselves, no would be the appropriate answer. They've been a proponent of their schedule, but at the same time, have they been better than I expected coming into the year relative to their schedule? I would say yes.
A little bit, yeah.
I thought that their record would be entirely a proponent of the schedule they've played. Mm-hmm. And while I do think it is a contributing factor to why they're 9-1, I don't think it's the only factor. they've been better than I anticipated. They've run the ball better. Their defense is really good, maybe even better than I anticipated. They've overall played better against that soft schedule.
Mm-hmm.
I think Miami matches them talent-wise. I think Miami has the skill position players on defense to really force Louisville into a situation where Jack Plummer is going to have to make some throws. And if you start to think about it from that angle, where, you know, how many teams has Louisville played this year where Plummer has had to make the throws? Absolutely gotten in a spot where he's had to make the throws.
Not many games.
Not many games. That's the schedule part, right? Mm-hmm. That's the schedule part. This is the first team, I think, where I look at, I'm like, if I'm Miami's defense and I have the team speed to match Louisville's team speed on offense, can I get after the quarterback a little bit here? I think if they do, if they're able to slow down the run, big if, but if they can slow down the run with Guerrero and Jawar Jordan, if they can do that and they can pin their ears back and get after Jack Plummer, I can reason my way into a Miami win here. Mm-hmm. I really can. Because I do think the offense is so variable in terms of, does Tyler Van Dyke take care of the football? Because when he does, Miami does move the ball well. Good offensive line, run the ball. They have the skill position players at wide receiver. You have to bank on Van Dyke not making a million mistakes. This really is a coin flip game. It's a coin flip game.
Yeah.
I'm steering into the line here too. I'm taking Miami. I can't believe I'm saying it. I'm taking Miami. They've been the more inconsistent team this year, but I think they get it done. I think what it is going to boil down to is Tyler Van Dyke making the plays and Jack Plummer maybe having the interception turnover issues, which hasn't been the case this year. It's kind of been flip-flopped. Mm-hmm. I think Van Dyke has the better game here. I think Jack Plummer struggles a little bit more. I think Miami forces him into passing situations. And I think the Hurricanes come out with a win. Give me Miami. Total. Lean under, but probably pass.
I'll start out by saying I'm going over the total.
Sure.
I'm going over the total, and honestly, I do think the defenses are probably better than the offenses in this game. But the reason I'm going to go over the total is because of that, and because of the turnover-worthy nature of both of these quarterbacks, I think there's going to be a couple short fields here or there. I think that there's going to be a couple of cheap scores, some cheap points that are created. So off the top, just give me the over here. I'll say this too, from a matchup standpoint, I do, I think I trust Louisville's defense here. Again, with the way that Miami's offense has played, which has been kind of inconsistent at best, and not to mention, again, the whole Tyler Van Dyke turnover worthy or turnover fest that happens from time to time. Like, do I think they can bait him into something like that? Yeah, I think so. So I will say that, and I think that favors Louisville. Mike, the other thing that I think favors Louisville that I don't think that we can discount here, we do remember what Miami just did 4 days ago, right? They lost to Florida State. Are we, regardless of what the analytics and the numbers and all the football reasons say, are we banking on Miami coming off the Florida State loss against a top 10 team? The top 10 thing, honestly, is probably the biggest detractor to the principle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
it's more principle than theory, because we've seen Miami just whittle away slowly or quickly after Florida State losses.
Yep. Mike, I'm doing the same thing that I'm doing Thursday night. If I'm a sucker, I'm a sucker. And if I lose, I lose. It's fine. But there is so little about this that makes me want to take Miami that I have to ride with Louisville. The only reason I would take Miami is because the line stinks, honestly. When I look at what these teams have been for a month and a half, and I think of what Miami's coming off of and the way that they match up and such, I think I have to take Louisville here, and I realize it's a dangerous spot for them. This is an ACC championship game clincher, by the way, that Louisville needs this to get to Charlotte. Otherwise, they need a little bit of help elsewhere. And you'd really rather do this on your own terms, finish 7-1 in the conference and lock up your spot in Charlotte. So we'll see if they can do that. We'll see if Miami can get up off the mat after last week and, you know, put a good showing together. But more often than not, they haven't in recent memory. So I'll take Louisville, but nothing would surprise me here. Honestly, either team could win this game by double digits and it would not surprise me.
A Miami victory and a Virginia Tech win keeps Virginia Tech's chances of a ACC championship berth alive.
Yep. And that's sure. What I'm going to start making memes of, you know, someone sneaking up on them, and it's going to be Anthony Calandria's name coming up from the background.
That'll be
coming
good
for the Hokies bowl chances or conference championship chances.
That'd be good. Can you imagine, Virginia Tech going to the final weekend of the season, 6-5 with a chance to go to the ACC title game? Hysterical.
Things that would be ACC as hell.
Yeah, that's some coastal ass energy.
Yeah. All that goes out the window if Louisville has got more on the scoreboard come about 4:00 on Saturday than Miami does. So
that's
we'll see. Who knows?
Yep.
Mike, let's move on to 3:00. On the CW, which, by the way, the first leg of a CW doubleheader here this weekend, because
what could possibly go wrong?
Good old fashioned CW doubleheader, a tradition unlike any other.
Looking forward to trying to get that in the quad box for the afternoon window.
Grief. Duke's on the road. They're a 3.5-point road favorite in Charlottesville, taking on the Virginia Cavaliers. The total is 47.5. Mike, how are you feeling about your favorite South Korean baseball team?
Oh, you talking the CW underdogs?
The CW underdogs, of course.
Listen, like I've always said,
better or worse than the NC Dinos or
like
SK Wyverns or
like I said, favorites don't go onto CW underdog home turf known as Scott Stadium in Charlottesville and come away unscathed. or do they? I don't know.
Is the Virginia Tech game, is that in Charlottesville or Blacksburg?
It is. It's in Charlottesville.
Okay, so this isn't senior day then. All right, so there's that.
It's not senior day. Well, it depends on how you look at it. I mean, are they letting seniors in for free? I'm talking like 65 and older. Like, if they letting them in the stadium for free, it could be senior day in that
with
sense.
Purchase of Zima.
With purchase of Zima and. I can see it. Two really good academic schools. I could get the old people riled up. I could get them all riled up.
Mm-hmm. These are terrible jokes.
I like
Duke. I'm
leaning
over here, by the way.
I'm leaning over. I like Duke. I like Duke. I liked who I saw have Grayson Loftus last week. We're going to get the Anthony Calandria experience, I think, here. Sounds like there's an outside chance we get a musket game for the finale for some reason. But yeah, it sounds like
course,
a Calandria
why
game.
Not?
This is a Calandria game. Virginia's offense is more explosive with Calandria in the lineup, but there's also more variability. I think both of those reasons actually lend credence to taking the over 47.5. For reasons you just said with the last game we just previewed with Louisville and Miami, if you get Calandria, like the turnover-prone version, you can get some short fields. If you get the high variance going the other way with Calandria throwing a bunch of long touchdown passes, which we've seen at times this year, you know, we could chase some points as well. Mm-hmm. So I do like the over. And to be honest with you, I really like how Duke moved the ball last week with Loftus at quarterback. Like, Duke was right there, right? And I thought the offense with him stepping into the lineup didn't look as discombobulated as I expected. So I think Duke's just a better team. I think they're better coached. Mm-hmm. I think Loftus provides them enough on the ground and through the air. I think he is an adequate backup quarterback to Riley Leonard versus whatever they were trotting out there in Henry Bolin. I think this is a better option. You're getting more out of your offense with Loftus. And I just think Duke is a better team. I think they're better coached. Give me Duke. We'll lay him on the road. With a little bit of confidence here, I think Duke wins this game by a touchdown.
Would you believe me if I told you that SP Plus favors
Virginia?
Duke.
Oh,
By two touchdowns.
Oh.
By a lot.
So what you're saying is that I am not favoring Duke by enough.
Yeah. Oh. You saying they win by a touchdown would be disappointing by SP Plus standards.
Sure.
Man, I'm torn on what to do here.
Just lean into, honestly, I mean, listen to what Chris Grondin's saying. UVA is a home dog, but Tony Elliott's like 2-9 at home.
I can't do it. Looking at that SP Plus line, I'm like, I was going to take Virginia in the points and basically just preface it with, I think every one of my picks this week is going to be wrong, but I see the SP Plus number. I can't ignore that. And I realize that Riley Leonard is cooked into that number a decent amount, and he won't be playing in this game. So there's that.
But quarterbacks are never worth more than like 3 or 4 points in college football, right? You always remind me of that.
Even that's probably too much. That's probably less than that. So I do think the one thing I will say that I worry about with Duke is the letdown effect of coming off a massive rivalry game, goes into double overtime, might feel like you were screwed. You're kind of reliving that game for an extra day or two. Like, do you come in here a little bit flat, a little bit unprepared relative to what you've been doing, and does something kind of start to go sideways on you? I don't know.
If they come into the game flat against a team like UVA, does UVA even know that they came in flat?
Well, yeah, I mean,
right?
Hard to say. Yeah,
I got to get some shade in there at UVA.
Yeah, that's
just to remind them.
There's that. Back-alum.
Just got to slide that in there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
Virginia's awesome. Virginia.
Oh, right.
Oh, no, God. That's on the loop. Good.
I was going to say, we cut that off just in time. Just in time. Yeah. Give me Duke.
Okay.
Give me Duke. I can't do it. But I will say this, I might be wrong on every one of my picks this week. Like, I don't know if I like any of my picks, honestly. So, lay him with Duke. 3.5, not a big number. I think that I will say that if anybody can contain Malik Washington and some of what Virginia has done in the passing game, it's probably this Duke secondary, which has been very good this year. And then do I think Duke can run the ball? Do I think Grayson Loftus can avoid making the mistake that cost the game for Duke? Yeah, I think so. So we'll see what happens. Once again, picking against CW underdogs has been a very, very unprofitable maneuver this year so far. So we'll see how profitable or unprofitable it is this week.
Fair enough.
And over 47.5 for me again, because
yeah, I'm over there. I'm on the over there too.
It just feels like these teams are going to get a couple points on the board. So we'll say that.
Yep.
All right. Duke in the over for the both of us there at 3:00, Mike, and the early window and the Thursday night games brought to you by section103.com. The internet's premier place for all things wonderful Georgia Tech apparel. They've got t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, things with the official Tech Gold, all the official word marks, something for the whole family, men, women, and children. They've got jerseys for Haynes King, Zach Pyron, Dante Smith, even Miles Kelly on the basketball team. They even had the Joe Hamilton shirt that was available. The coach hoodie, by the way, the gray coach hoodie, unbelievably soft and comfortable, perfect for this time of year if you're looking for something to wear to the game Saturday night, by the way, which will be at Bobby Dodd Stadium. We'll be previewing that here shortly, but that's going to be a night game. It's going to be a little bit chilly there in Atlanta. If you need something long-sleeved, get that coach hoodie. Once again, use promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order at section103.com. Just so much high-quality, really comfortable, great-looking apparel there. Steven and the gang, they do a great job, and we really appreciate their support. Go support them. Go get something great that you'll wear. You'll look great. You'll feel great wearing it. You will be advertising your favorite team as best as you possibly can. Once again, go ACC at section103.com for 10% off your first order. Thank you to Steven and the gang there.
Let's do the other ones. We're also sponsored by Homefield Apparel. Use promo code GOACC at checkout, 15% off your first order from Homefield. Mm-hmm. The bomber jackets, I'm going to continue to reiterate this. They are very, very nice. They're also going quickly. They are very popular. ACC mm-hmm. schools have a bunch of them on Homefield. I keep getting the emails from Whitney. She says to push these. We're pushing them. Mm-hmm. Go get yourself a bomber jacket from section103.com. If There's
homefieldapparel.com.
I'm sorry. Homefieldapparel.com. We already did the Section 103 read. Homefieldapparel.com. Promo code. Go ECC at checkout. 15% off your first order. Get a bomber jacket. Get a t-shirt. Mini collections. They got everything you could possibly need. Vintage designs. Very comfortable clothing. Shirts. Sweatshirts. The bomber jackets.
Couple of hats. ECC.
Hats. You name it. They got it. Black Friday coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas season.
Say,
anything you could possibly need.
You need Christmas gifts. You need Hanukkah gifts. You need Festivus gifts. Whatever your winter season holiday can't that involves Kwanzaa. Gifts. Kwanzaa gifts. Do they do gifts for Kwanzaa? Sure. I guess. I don't know.
Chrismahana Kwanzaa is what I used to call it.
Chrismahana Kwanzaa.
Yeah, there you go.
We're going to leave that one right there. Go ACC at checkout. 15% off your first order from Homefield. We're also sponsored by Vivid Seats. Use the promo code BCPOD20. $20 off first order, $200 or more. They're a third-party ticket reseller. Pretty simple. Use the link in the description to this video. Use the link if you're listening on your podcast app that's in the episode description. Click on it. Then buy your tickets to whatever you're going to, sports, concerts, you name it. They got tickets to it. Use that promo code BCPOD20. $20 off your first order of $200 or more from Vivid Seats.
Do it. Do it. Mike, we good to move on to 330?
Yeah, before I butcher the ad read again. Let's move on. Shout out Homefield. Shout out Section 103 too, of course. But
go to all of them. All of them got
please.
Good stuff.
Please just go to all of them. It helps us.
3:30 on NBC, the Wake Forest Steamin' Deacs on the road in South Bend, taking on the number 19 Notre Dame Fightin' Irish. The Irish, a 24.5-point home favorite. Total is 46.5. Mike, why should I not be taking Notre Dame here?
I have one thing to say about Wake Forest. Scott, you got good sound for me? Something you played earlier.
Bang, 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 you're dead.
They gon' die, buddy. Mm-hmm. They gon' die. Notre Dame's coming off a bye week. They're rested up. Notre Dame would still like to go to a decently big bowl game that you can go to if you're 9-3 and kick the piss out of teams like Wake Forest and Stanford, because they're playing Stanford on the Pac-12 network in the final regular season week of the season, which is just phenomenal. Like, what a way to send the Pac-12 network off into the abyss.
Mm-hmm. ACC school, Stanford.
That's right.
That's right. Why is this game on ACC network? I have questions.
Or the CW, even. I'm like,
yeah, Stanford would be one hell of a CW underdog to pick. But back to this game. give me the Irish. Wake Forest.
Sam Hartman revenge game.
Sam Hartman revenge game. This is going to be one of Sam Hartman's better games this year. Famous last words. This is going to be one of Sam Hartman's better games this year. Wake Forest defense, not fantastic. The offense is worse. There is no path for Wake Forest here. Notre Dame can come out, not even play particularly well offensively. Save my Sam Hartman prediction that I just mentioned doesn't even happen. Notre Dame can come out here and run like the offense they ran against Navy. And this could be like 35-6 or something. I mean, yeah. Give me the Irish and the cover. And I actually, to be honest with you, I wouldn't even touch the total. I don't know how much Wake's going to score, man. And if Notre Dame gets scoring, like they get moving on offense, maybe they get there by themselves sort of thing. I have no interest in the total this week, but I do like Notre Dame to win and cover here.
Mike, you know that feeling like when you're walking through a casino and you walk up to a roulette table and you're going to try to put your chips either on red or on black or on like the first third, second third, you know, last third, basically. And you're going to put your money there, but like you don't know. You're just guessing. You're just gambling. You know, you're trying to get a payout. You'll see what happens.
Would this be the opposite of that?
No. Oh, what I'm saying is, do you get the same feeling if I ask you who's going to be Wake Forest quarterback in this game?
Oh, okay.
It kind of feels like a roulette table of like, I don't know.
I didn't realize that was what you were teeing up. for what it's worth, Michael Kern was atop the depth chart that was released to the media earlier this week, for what it's worth.
Yeah, he was a starter this past weekend, and it was Mitch Griffiths the weekend before. And I think it was I don't know, the other guy, the Italian name, the week before that.
Santino Marucci?
Santino Marella. Yeah, the old WWE wrestler, I think, was their quarterback 2 weeks ago.
Steve Mariucci? No. Was it like Santucci? I can't remember. I don't know what his name was. I don't think he's the one playing quarterback, though, so I don't think we got to worry about it.
This is my point. I don't know.
Name that Italian.
Which, to that point, yeah, give me Notre Dame. I will lay the points. I'd lay anything almost less than 30, I think. This feels like a little bit of a name your score game for Notre Dame. And to that point, by the way, producer Scott, not only do I want Notre Dame laying the points, I think I'm locking up the Irish here.
You better lock it up. You better lock it up. No, you lock it up. You lock it up. Lock it up. Lock it up.
Please. I think Spicy. Wake Forest is cooked, done. Like, they're out. So I would be surprised if they're putting up a fight in the second half of this game. I think Notre Dame can run away with this easily. I agree with your take on the total of 46.5, is that just leave it alone, because you're basically banking on some amount of scoring from Wake. And I don't know that I would be willing to bank on that. Yeah. If anything, I might try to go find a team total for Notre Dame. And if it's like 31 or something, try to maybe take the over on that.
Yeah, that's fair. To correct the record, it is Santino Marucci. I was right the first time.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I'm pretty sure Tyler Santucci was somebody else, like in ACC somewhere recently.
Well, as I noted, Santino Marella was a WWE wrestler like 8 years ago. So
good.
I don't expect it'll be him.
We're all caught up there. That's what you're telling me.
Yeah, fair enough. Notre Dame minus the 24.5 for the both of us, and I got it locked up. Let's keep moving.
I need to talk about this too. I said Tyler Santucci, and I was having trouble placing who he is. That's Duke's defensive coordinator. So it's really important that I correct that. He is important Duke's defensive coordinator under Mike Elko.
Duly noted.
Knew that name rang a bell. That's really important that I mention that, since he's a relevant coach in the ACC. Let's officially move on.
Noted. All right. Also at 3:30 on ESPN, the number 20 North Carolina Tar Heels on the road in Death Valley, taking on the Clemson Tigers. Clemson, a 6.5-point home favorite over the ranked Tar Heels. Mike, do you know what to do here? Because I really don't feel like I do.
Clemson, -6.5. We're locking it up.
Oh.
You better lock it up. No, you lock it up. You lock it up. Lock it up. Lock it up.
I am not particularly confident that North Carolina is going to be able to stop the Clemson rushing attack that has been running the ball really well over the last couple of weeks. I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about Carolina's ability to block for Drake May here with the way Clemson's front seven's been playing. I think Drake May has not exactly been careful with the football in some of these bigger spots against better defenses. I think he could turn the ball over a couple times, give Clemson a short field. I like the way the Clemson running game is trending. I'm not sure Carolina is going to have all the answers there. And I do think they're going to have trouble protecting May a little bit. The big question here is whether or not Carolina can get anything out of their running game. Because I do think if Amarian Hampton has a nice game, I do think that is obviously a path for Carolina to not only cover, but to win the game outright. That really changes everything, because I think that opens things up a bit more for Drake May in the passing game. And Hampton's been so good and so hard to contain all year, right? So I think that is the one question I have. But with the way Clemson's been playing complimentary football the last couple of weeks, Klubnik hasn't been awful, played pretty well against Georgia Tech last week. Georgia Tech's defense, I'm not sure it's too much worse than what Carolina's been trotting out the second half of the season. To be honest with you, that Carolina defense has regressed a ton from what we saw out of it in September. I just don't have a ton of confidence that Carolina's going to get enough stops here, actually, mm-hmm. which is a wild thing to say with mm-hmm. Clemson's offense. But it's a sentence that came out of my mouth. I do think Clemson's defense will be game here. So give me Clemson to win this game by like 7 to 10 points. I like the Tigers here at home.
I think you're right. Honestly, like, if there's a defense out there that's going to be able to consistently slow down North Carolina's offense, this is probably one of them, right? And I don't like a number as big as 6.5. Like, I'd feel better if it were 3.5 or something like that. But so that's where I'm wary is like, does Clemson win this game, you know, I don't know, 31-27 or something like that, to where it's a little bit closer than the number, but it's still a win for Clemson. I guess. I'll lay him with Clemson. I don't feel great about it. I this feels like a pretty good number. And I do think that Clemson can slow down this North Carolina offense pretty well. I don't think that North Carolina's defense is going to do even a decent job of containing what Clemson's been doing in the run game.
Gave up 41 to a backup quarterback at home last week.
I mean, Georgia Tech ran for 300 yards on North Carolina like 3 weeks ago. So, like, anything is possible. So
with the way that and that's the Georgia Tech rushing attack has been kind of up and down all year outside of Haynes King. I mean, this Clemson rushing attack with Maffa, I mean, Maffa was really good last week. I know Will Shipley came back, had that touchdown run, like looked good. Everybody was talking about that. Maffa was really good for a second week in a row. Like they really,
so he had a really big week 2 weeks ago
against Notre Dame. They got something cooking here in the running game, I think, over the last couple of weeks. I do think that it has a very high chance of continuing against this Carolina rushing defense.
I'll say this too, and I made the comment on the recap after Georgia Tech beat North Carolina, but it was something that I feel like I saw a little bit of last weekend as well against Duke, is like North Carolina's defense doesn't have to spend that much time on the field before they do kind of look a little bit gassed. Like if they spend like 23 to 25 minutes on the field during a game, which is, by the way, less than half the game, they start looking a little bit slower. They, you know, they're taking poorer angles. Like there's something weird going on there with North Carolina's defense that they don't look like they're prepared to compete for a full 60 minutes in a lot of cases. And yeah, in a game like this, I wonder if Clemson gets like a late touchdown or something to pull away that gives them the margin here.
That's a really good point, because I mean, I was watching Carolina in the second half last week, specifically like late third, early fourth quarter, and I'm seeing the way Duke's moving the ball, and I'm like, Carolina's looking tired. They got like an entire quarter left to play here. What's going on? Right.
Yeah.
Which to that end, Garrett Riley, I don't think Garrett Riley's an idiot. I know the offense has been up and down this year. I don't think he's an idiot. I would just run Maffa and Shipley at the Carolina defense like 40 times. Just give them like 18 to 20 carries each. Have Klubnik throw the ball like 12 to 15 times. If they're carving the Carolina defense up in the running game and they all of a sudden start to stack the box, Klubnik could complete like 12 passes for 200 yards if he wants to here.
Yeah.
It's that kind of game if they want it to be. So that's kind of where I think Clemson gets the separation, right?
Yeah.
Keep running the ball completely in the clock.
The other thing along the lines of that conditioning that I would keep an eye out for that Georgia Tech did to good effect against North Carolina was going very side to side against them. And I thought, you know, Georgia Tech going side to side against Clemson did not work at all, because Clemson's defense is very fast, very athletic. Like that was something that was, it was kind of a miscalculation, I think, trying to do that. Can you do it against North Carolina's defense? Yeah, I do. And Georgia Tech did it. It worked very well. Wouldn't be surprised to see Clemson do it here as well. Because you're A, running the ball right at him, and B, making easy throws for Klubnik side to side, that you're not making him do anything too difficult down the field.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you can really kind of wear on that defense and move the ball effectively. So, yeah. I don't know, something to keep an eye on. I think it sets up well for Clemson. Anytime they run up against a decent defense, it's been a problem, but this is not what I would call a decent defense. So,
No, I would agree.
So, all right, Clemson minus the 6.5 for the both of us. Mike's got it locked up. Total's 58.5. Pass.
I could pass.
Yeah. Pass. I see it going 14 points on either side of that number, and just no thanks. All right, last one at 3:30 on the ACC Network. The NC State Wolfpack on the road in Blacksburg taking on your Virginia Tech Hokies, Mike. Hokies a 3-point home favorite. Total's 43.5. That's a low number. I think give me the under, first of all, because this feels like this has high potential to be an absolute rock fight of a game.
Yeah, under 43.5. We're going to go ahead and lock that up, too.
Ooh. You better lock it up. No, you lock it up. You lock it up. Lock it up. Lock it up.
Please.
Yeah, it took me a while before I started making some picks tonight, but now we're firing from the hip, baby. I like these two picks a lot, right? I like that Clemson number, and I do like the total here going under. Look, this is real easy for me. This comes down to whether or not Virginia Tech can score 17 points. That 17 to 20 point range is a sweet spot. Look at the games that NC State has lost this year, right? Like NC State, when they've had trouble eclipsing that 17 point mark on offense, they've lost, right? Mm-hmm. This is an offense that really, really struggles. They're really, really bad, guys. Like, in my opinion, Virginia Tech, looking at what they were able to do against Boston College's offense last week, I think this NC State offense is very similar, except they have a worse offensive line than Boston College does. Boston College actually protect, we talked about this earlier, but they actually protect Castellanos decently well. NC State doesn't really protect the quarterback. They got Brandon Armstrong killed early in the year. They got MJ Walker. They got, did I get his name right?
MJ Morris.
Thank you. MJ Walker plays basketball for Florida State. I always do this.
I was going to say, yeah. Basketball player?
I think right. So, yeah. Yeah. MJ Morris. They had MJ Morris running for his life to the point where he like redshirts and he's probably going to leave the program. This is an opportunity, I think, for Virginia Tech's defense to really, really put the pressure on NC State and try to force a turnover to, like they did last week, to set up a short field against Boston College. The story here is going to be whether or not Virginia Tech's offense can score touchdowns in the red zone. I think if they score touchdowns in the red zone, I think they're going to win this game by like 7-10. If they don't, and it's kicking a lot of field goals, then I think you're getting to a game where, okay, turnover here, turnover there, forced by NC State's defense against Kyren Drones, who he's still a first-year starter, right? He's mm-hmm. been very, very good at home. You look at his home versus road splits, he has been excellent at Lane Stadium, taking care of the football, has yet to throw an interception at Lane Stadium. He's been really, really good at home this year. If you force a turnover or two out of Virginia Tech's offense to set up short fields for NC State, then we're kind of talking about things the other way, right? Where can Virginia Tech get enough going against a very good NC State defense? NC State's defense is probably the best unit on the field in this game.
Oh, yeah, completely.
And I think that's the story, is whether or not Virginia Tech can score enough. If Tech has trouble putting the ball in the end zone, can Virginia Tech's defense hold up against 60 minutes, even against an offense that I don't think is particularly good? That's a question that Virginia Tech hasn't answered yet this year. Mm-hmm. Like, the Hokies' wins have been big. Their losses, really, since entering conference play, have been to Florida State and Louisville, two superior teams. So Virginia Tech hasn't answered the question of whether or not they can win a tight game against a really, you know, facing a really good defense. They haven't answered that question yet this year.
Mm-hmm.
So this might be the game where they have to, at least not positively. And this is the game where they're going to have to do it. Yeah, I don't want to talk about Purdue. This is the game where they're going to have to answer that question with the biggest stakes on the line, with a bowl game on the line. You got to go and answer that question on senior day at home. I like the Hokies close. I think Virginia Tech wins. I love the under.
Mm-hmm.
This feels to me, Joey, like a 3-point game in either direction. I'm thinking like 17-14, 20-17, 21-17. Those all go under the total.
Mm-hmm.
Any variation of that goes under. I think the Hokies went close. I think they get to bowl eligibility this week. I like the way Virginia Tech's offense has been playing. Can they do it against a defense of NC State's caliber while also holding down NC State's pretty bad offense on the other side? I think they can do it at home. If it was this was in Raleigh, maybe I'm not feeling as good about it. But Hokies close, love the under.
Yeah. First of all, I want to point out, we talk about the big theme here of this weekend being spooky lines and weird lines. Part of what you're seeing here, by the way, is almost every one of these games we've talked about so far, other than the Notre Dame game and I guess to some degree the Clemson game, it's a bunch of games with spreads of like 4 points or less. Like, there are a bunch of fair fights that are very interesting to watch and see, you know, who's able to come on top, because I don't I cannot promise you it's going to be one team or the other. And that's really where my head's at with this game. Is this feels like a game that a defensive or special team score or a major play on one of those is going to set somebody up with a short field, but that's going to like decide the game. Either a pick six, a scoop six, a punt return down to the five, you know, something like that, that basically sets a team up with an easy score. I think that has every bit of potential to decide a game like this. And I agree. I mean, the thing that you point out is that NC State's defense is the best unit in this game. And honestly, I don't think it's close. If you look at the SP plus ratings for each of the four primary units here, NC State's offense, Virginia Tech's offense, both kind of in the 70s nationally, Virginia Tech's defense, like in the 40s, NC State's defense is 16th nationally. They are really good. And it's clear that they are the best thing in this game. I feel like this is where Virginia Tech pays a price a little bit with a freshman quarterback behind center. Is not only NC State's defense is good. Part of the reason they're so good is that they have some seniors. They've got some old guys on that defense. I just have a feeling that Peyton Wilson is going to come up with an interception or a forced fumble or something in this game that, you know, just it's just a thing that a guy who has played 65 college games so far or whatever it's been, like, he's going to come up with something here against Virginia Tech's offense. Give me NC State to win this game on the field. I agree. Close game. I think, again, 3 to 4 point margin is completely reasonable. Producer Scott and I were also talking about this a little bit before we went live. There's a part of me that feels like we're a little bit due for, like, Brennan Armstrong to have a decidedly good game.
Hasn't had one yet. And yeah, that's been weird.
And could it happen on Saturday? I think it could.
Running out of chances.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got like two more chances, maybe three, yeah, I guess, with the bowl game. But
yeah,
if it's going to happen at NC State, it's got to happen soon. So give me NC State to win the game on the field. I think their defense comes up with a big play at some point and wins it. But again, I think it's close. I think it's low scoring. I completely agree with the under. I'm not ballsy enough yet to lock it up, but that is on the card for here in the next 15 minutes or so. We'll see.
Do it.
Yeah. All right. NC State outright for me. You got Hokies -3, I guess. Three.
I guess I'll take them to cover. Sure. Yeah.
Fair enough. Both of us have the under. You have the under locked up. Mike, night slate. We will go to the second half of the doubleheader on the CW.
How are we feeling about the CW underdogs here in this spot, Joey? That's a real question.
Not good. Not good. North Alabama.
You don't feel good about North Alabama's chances? I'm pretty sure they lost to like Central Connecticut or Central Arkansas. They lost to a directional state school last week that is not in the FBS.
What would they be, like a 4-point underdog against Boston College? Or never mind. Sorry.
Easy. 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 Dear God.
I'm kidding. I have been
running roughshod. Well, you have been too, I guess, on the Boston College fan base the last couple of weeks. That's like when you hold up. That's like when you hold up that sign at game day, like, we had our expectations for you were low, but holy shit. This is when you hold the sign up.
North Alabama is 3-7 this year.
In the FCS.
All FCS games. Yeah, they haven't played an FBS game yet. They have wins over Chattanooga, Tennessee Tech, and Utah Tech. They've barely played. They've played a couple of teams that are ranked in the FCS.
How much are they getting paid? The answer's not enough.
Say, I don't know, 1.5, you think, or something like that? Florida State, there is no excuse. If this goes sideways, this should not be a game at halftime. Like, get this done. The whole point here, by the way, I should probably mention, this is where Florida State is participating in the long-honored Southeastern tradition of SoCon Saturday.
Oh.
Got a rivalry game coming up next week, so play a cupcake game the week before.
Yes. I see Josh.
Georgia's doing that with Tennessee, you know.
Josh D. Pence in the comments. It's going to be plenty of quote, Tate time.
Yeah.
I agree. Just don't say that five times fast. Might come out of something a little bit different.
Yeah, Tate Rodemaker should have a lot of reps in this game.
Yeah. So, yep.
Yeah, Knowles. Yep. Nothing else on that.
Yep. Scott said North Alabama is getting paid $400K to play this game. That's not enough.
Wow, is that it?
That's not enough.
It's not enough. Not enough. All right. Last game of the day, Mike.
I'm taking Florida State, by the way. Just
yeah, sure. We don't. Yeah, for anyone you know new here, we don't really do spreads on FBS FCS games. So you know, yeah, I agree. I'll be bold and take the Noles to beat North Alabama.
Okay, good.
Yeah, there we go. What? By the way, we got to know the mascot here. What did we? What did we do here? Hang on. The Lions.
They're Lions
decidedly. Decidedly not the best Lions in all of football in the United States. There's at least one team named the Lions that I can think of that's a lot better right now than North Alabama is.
That's something I would agree with.
Speaking of Texas A&M coaching candidates, anyways, 8 o'clock on the ACC.
Chill out with the Dan Campbell talk.
8 o'clock on the ACC network. The Syracuse Orange are on the road in Atlanta, taking on my Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. Jackets a 6.5-point favorite. Total is 53.5. Mike, this is the bowl eligible. Both teams coming in with 5 wins. If Georgia Tech is going to get bowl eligible, got to have this one because
I'd say you're
probably not upsetting the playoff apple cart next week, I would assume.
That would be fun, but I would venture to guess that I would venture to, yeah. Joey might be too drunk to talk on this podcast if Georgia Tech beat Georgia. I'd be having a conversation by myself and with, I want to say the corpse of Scott. That would be unfair because we're coming off a holiday weekend. So Scott and I will be pretty heavily intoxicated. Whoa. So
of course. Relax.
So
if Georgia Tech beats Georgia and I am on the Saturday Night Live recap, it will be like a lights are on but nobody's home situation, like for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, Georgia Tech better beat Syracuse this week if they want to go to a bowl game.
Syracuse has two more chances to also get their 6th win, by the way. It's this week against Georgia Tech, and I believe next week against Wake Forest.
Sounds right.
Sure.
Correct. Correct.
That's correct. Okay. I mean, wow. I mean, they could win one or both of those. Or neither. I mean, they could also lose both. That would be very funny. I like Georgia Tech here, by the way. I like the Jackets at home, covering the 6.5. They've been the more consistent team. Syracuse's Garrett Schrader is just simply not healthy. I don't care. I don't care what Dino Babers says. When Dan Filari, a quarterback turned tight end turned back quarterback, has to come in and he throws 3 balls and Garrett Schrader runs the ball like 30 times, he's not healthy. Okay. Georgia Tech's defense has not been very good this year, I think would be fair. But I think they are competent enough to stop a one-dimensional offense. Garrett Schrader really needs to be healthy here, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that. And I do think Georgia Tech's offense scores against Syracuse's defense. Is this senior day for Georgia Tech?
It is not.
It's not. Oh, good. So you get to lose by 40 at home next week. Excellent.
In front of all your friends and family.
That's good. That's very nice. What a Thanksgiving treat.
You get a nice plaque and like some flowers beforehand too. So there's that.
Oh, good. Well, very good. Yeah.
Oh my God. Is that true? Hang on.
You smell those before the smelling salts. That is correct. That is correct. That is correct.
If you're listening on audio and you don't know what I'm laughing about right now, our buddy Caleb Fields basically correcting us saying that's ACC co-running back of the week, Dan Filari.
And that's not a joke. He was actually named ACC co-running back of the week.
When is the last time
a quarterback turned tight end, turned quarterback again, was named the co-running back of the week?
Yes!
In the ACC?
That's outstanding.
That's some Conference USA ass stuff if I've ever heard of it.
What is that, Frank Gore Jr. at Southern Miss winning quarterback of the week in the conference? Like
we're going to have to open up a dialogue here shortly, real briefly, on Bowling Green and what happened last night.
Good Lord.
I like the Jackets, Joey. I think they get it done. I don't trust Syracuse without a healthy Garrett Schrader. That's the crux of it, and I think the Jackets get it done at home. I would not be surprised to see Syracuse cover here, even, you know, without the quarterback being what it is. You know, can Syracuse's defense stop Georgia Tech's rushing attack with Haynes King, kind of the head of that snake? That's the question. Georgia Tech's offense, when it's been at its best, Haynes King has been really involved in the running game. I expect that to continue. Can Syracuse get enough stops to make it interesting? Sure. So I'll take Syracuse, I guess, plus the 6.5, but I like Georgia Tech outright here. I think they kind of keep him at arm's reach, and maybe we have a little bit of a backdoor cover situation, but I do like the Jackets to make a bowl game.
Mike, you know how I told you that every one of my picks might be wrong this week?
Including this one? Would that be including this one?
It would be including this one.
Okay.
Do you know the last time that these two teams played?
No.
It was 2020.
Okay.
It was in the Carrier Dome. It was an empty Carrier Dome.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know Syracuse's final record that year?
It wasn't good.
It was not good. They were 1-10.
That was their only win.
Do you want to know what the one was, Mike?
It was their only win. It's all coming back to me now, baby.
Jeff Collins' band of merry men goes up into the Carrier Dome and lays a big fat egg.
It is the holiday season.
And it, yeah, is the only team that Syracuse beat that year. Now, am I sitting here trying to tell you that I think that there is some sort of voodoo when Georgia Tech plays Syracuse? I am not. That I don't think that there's any – this is not a consistent matchup. Like, you know, I think Tech has otherwise beaten Syracuse almost every time they've played since they've been in the ACC. Like, it's fine. What I am trying to tell you, Mike, is that I don't trust Georgia Tech as far as I can throw them, and I cannot throw them very far. Mm-hmm. Should they win this game? Yes. Should they get to bowl eligibility? Yes. Am I taking Georgia Tech -6.5? Absolutely not.
You are not.
Am I taking Georgia Tech to win this game? Absolutely not. No.
Okay.
Give me Syracuse on the field on Saturday. Okay. Call it an emotional hedge, but honestly, it is literally just that. Not football reasons. It is literally, I don't trust this team at all. And there has
you
been
are ridiculous.
There has been very little that they have done this year to make me trust them in any given spot to do what they're supposed to do. They don't do anything like they're supposed to do. They beat teams they shouldn't. They lose to teams they shouldn't. They shouldn't lose to this team. They're going to lose to them. I'm just telling you that right now. And honestly, if we get on here Saturday night and they have won the game and Georgia Tech is bowl eligible, I will be as happy as a clam. I am not rooting for this. I'm just telling you this is probably what's going to happen.
This is not the first time. It certainly won't be the last time that I call you, my good friend, a dummy. You are such a dummy. What is there?
We'll
what
see
is
who's
there?
A dummy. We'll see.
What is there to believe in with Syracuse? You give all those reasons about not being able to trust Georgia Tech. Why exactly are we trusting Syracuse, especially with Dan Villari maybe potentially playing quarterback here? What are we doing?
How dead in the water did they look 2 weeks ago,
bro? They had to
what
run
they do
the
last
option.
Week?
They had to run the option last week.
And how'd that go?
Does Georgia Tech know how to defend the option? They better.
No!
Are you kidding me? Why not?
They lost to the Citadel 3 games after the option offense was out the door.
Buddy.
They don't know how to defend the option.
Buddy, the Citadel. Okay. Point well taken on the Citadel. Point well taken. That actually, you know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, that kills my entire argument. That kills my entire argument. Fair enough. Let's pick Syracuse. What the hell?
I'm just saying. Now, that is the one thing that I think is a questionable. Yeah, there is a questionable aspect to this is what Syracuse did last week is they ran kind of a different offense than you have seen them run most of this year, most of the Dino tenure. Does putting it on film a week earlier give Georgia Tech the ability to prepare for it a little bit better than they would if it was just sort of broken out in the middle of the first quarter randomly and all of a sudden you're scrambling on your heels? I don't know. I hope I'm wrong.
All you're saying is that if Syracuse wins this game and you're referencing, you know, the Syracuse victory last week in Yankee Stadium, all you're trying to tell me is this won't be the last time that Syracuse plays in Yankee Stadium this year. That's all you're saying here.
Get them to the Pinstripe Bowl.
Get them to the Pinstripe Bowl. That's right. Let's play a really bad Big Ten team. Shout out Northwestern.
I hope I'm wrong. I hope Georgia Tech covers. I hope they win this game by 30. That would make me really, really happy.
Amazing.
I don't trust them to do it.
Amazing.
Don't trust them. Total's 53.5. I think
Pass.
Leave it alone.
Pass. Yeah.
A lot of variance. So we'll see. Hope I'm wrong. Mike, that's all I've got on previews for this week.
That was a disgusting end. Bowling Green blew a three touchdown lead at halftime last night to Mac to the now Mac West winner, Toledo Rockets. And in true Bowling Green fashion, with a minute 43 to play, they give up a 54-yard touchdown pass, where the running back runs out to the flat and Daquan Finn, Toledo's quarterback, hits the running back in the flat. God bless him. Don't remember his name. And he takes it up the sideline, untouched, 54 yards for the decisive touchdown. Bowling Green's offense, which looked like a wagon in the first half, then proceeds to give up a sack and have two straight incomplete passes, and then throw up a prayer on like 4th and 14 that fell incomplete. And that's how Bowling Green lost last night as a 10.5-point underdog.
Bowling Green had 5 drives in the first half, scored 4 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
They had 28 points in the first half. In the second half, they had 3.
Josh, and
by the way, that offense got the ball with just under 2 minutes left, 4 plays, -7 yards, turnover on downs.
Yeah, and Josh Penn's great point. The decisive play in the game was that Daquan Finn touchdown pass out into the flat. That did come on 4th down and 2. That was the ball game. If Bowling Green gets a stop there, they upset Toledo in a gigantic rivalry win to make Toledo sweat a little bit in terms of winning the MAC West division title. So spicy.
What could have been?
Toledo's 10-1.
Scott Loeffler's getting a contract extension.
I mean, yeah, they're the bar in the MAC. So
I've followed Scott Loeffler's career long enough to know what happens next.
This all starts out by being my fault as a Virginia Tech alum.
Hey, that's one thing that you and Boston College fans have in common is Scott
Loeffler. Oh, good. Thank you for reminding me. I forgot about his stint at Boston College. Thank you.
Steve Adazio's protege.
Yeah. Jeff Hafley wishes he had Scott Loeffler on his staff right about now.
Good grief. Okay. All right.
Did Miami, Ohio win? Josh said Toledo against Miami, Ohio for the MAC title. I'm assuming Miami won tonight. Well, that's fun.
I had no idea what the MAC standings were, so sure.
Miami played Buffalo tonight.
Yeah, I saw something that I feel like there was something screwy that happened in that game, too.
I'm sure.
Our guy Kelly Quinlan tweeted something about that earlier. Anyways, this is not a MAC podcast. It is a Bowling Green podcast.
It could be. I mean, that's just to wet your palate. It could be a MAC podcast in a year or two, depending on what happens with the ACC. So,
well, yeah, anything's possible these days.
Yeah.
All right, Mike. To recap our locks for Week 12, I have Notre Dame -24.5 against Wake Forest. You have Clemson -6.5 against North Carolina. You have under the number, which was 43.5 in North Carolina State and Virginia Tech. And let's see. Should I join you on that under, or should I go over 47.5 in Duke and Virginia?
Join me, more the merrier.
Yeah. All right. Under 43.5, NC State and Virginia Tech. I'll lock that up as well.
You better lock it up. No, you lock it up. You lock it up. Lock it up. Lock it up.
Please.
Yes, please. All right, Mike. I think that's all I got on Week 12. Anything else?
I think I'm good, man. That's
Scott,
it.
Do we forget anything?
Subscribe, like, rate. Trying to get to 300 before end of the year. We get to 500. We got a prize for the 500 subscriber. But you won't find that out till next season unless you convince your friends to subscribe.
Like this week, basically. One more thing, by the way, that I try to remember this every time, and I forget it every time, basically. We would, if you're still listening to this, we would love your help this weekend. So I think the plan right now is to do Saturday Night Fever, the live recap Saturday night, youtube.com/@theaccfootballpodcast. Either way, whether we do, whether we don't, something that you can do, a listener, to help us out in a major way is to tweet at us, email us, do whatever you got to do on Saturday as you're watching these games. If something ridiculous happens that's a Go ACC Moment of the Week candidate, something silly happens that's a Brian Van Gorder Memorial You Tried Award candidate that you see when you're watching these games, if you can find us a clip or send us a timestamp in the games, anything at all to help come up with nominees for those awards, super helpful for us. We would really appreciate the interaction with the show. So send those over however you know to, if you see something while you're watching the games on Saturday. We would really appreciate that. So again, at BC Podcast ACC on Twitter, basketballconferencepodcast@gmail.com on the emails.
Nail it.
Thanks. Yeah, send those things over if you have award nominees as you watch the games over the weekend.
Yeah, please do that. Really helpful, because we get as many eyes on these games as we can. But when we're doing an instant reaction show at midnight after I'm coming off an SI shift and Joey is, well,
parenting father, multiple children all day.
A father of two kids, multiple dogs, and has obligations other than to watch like 11 hours of football on Saturdays. Yeah, as many eyes on the televisions as we can, please. Thank you.
Yeah, please, please. As mentioned, we're also on Twitter. I'm at FTRS Joey. He's at Mike McDaniel SI. You can find us on iTunes, on Google, on Amazon, on any other number of audio platforms that you might get your podcasts on. Go find us there for the audio versions. Once again, we're on youtube.com/@theaccfootballpodcast. Hit the subscribe button, hit the bell icon to be notified when we're going live. As mentioned, emails can be sent to the longest email address known to man, basketballconferencepodcast@gmail.com.
Nailed it.
Thank you. Mike, where else on the social medias?
Instagram at BC Podcast ACC. We're on Facebook as well. Facebook.com/BC Podcast ACC, right?
Basketball conference, but good try.
Cool. It's late. I've done two podcasts tonight, and I worked a full day. I'm just actively stroking out on this podcast tonight. So,
phrasing. I think that's all I got. Anything else on week 12 before we get out of here?
Good.
Mike and I will be coming off a banner day of golf on Saturday where we're definitely going to hit a hole in one, and then we'll be back. And if that actually happens, I'm hitting the lottery after.
Yep. Called it right here.
Hit them straight. I'm playing next Tuesday, so maybe we'll podcast immediately after that and see how that goes.
Okay.
We'll see how it goes. I don't know. We'll find out. In any case, come back, check in. Saturday night, around midnight Eastern, maybe a few minutes after, for Saturday Night Fever, the live recap. Jump in the comments section. We would love to have you join us. And until then, for Mr. Mike McDaniel, for Mr. Producer Scott, I am Joey Weaver. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will talk to you again very soon. Enjoy the games. And until then, go ACC.